It's always wonderful when I get a chance to interview my congressman, the guy I vote for, voted for. I can see no reason I won't vote for him for the rest of my days. Congressman Richie Neal of Massachusetts 1st District, a Democrat in office since 1989, and certainly one of the most powerful and important people in the United States Congress. He is the ranking member of the Ways and Means Committee, and therefore the guy who really is in a position to bring home a lot of bacon. Richie, thanks for being with us.
Delighted to be with you as always, Alan.
Okay, so let me start by the President of the United States has now called for extreme vetting in terms of letting people into the country because of the latest tragedy in New York. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's obviously a reaction to what happened in New York City, and I understand the apprehension that people feel. But I also think following the advice of career people in this arena is important as well. And I think that we want to make sure that those who are radicalized, usually by the Internet, incidentally, are monitored. And I see nothing wrong with that. And at the same time, I also think that it's apparent that this fellow was radicalized while he was in the United States. And that seems to be what the early indicators are. So I think that vetting those who come in, if they have any history of organizing under the heading of ISIS, I think that's an important consideration. And I think that one of the things that's happened, though, and it's worthwhile to note, is that Uzbekistan would not have been one of the countries that the president has highlighted in the past.
What is the appeal? Do they poll, you think, and say, well, you know, people want people kept out of the country? Or do they? Is this just an appeal to the base?
I think part of it's an appeal to the base, for sure. And I also think that part of the response after 9/11 has been, as we repeatedly take note of for good reason, to be vigilant. And I think that as I watched and reviewed what was happening in New York last night, and they talked to longtime people who had been involved on the terrorist front, they indicated that part of the acknowledgement here would be to search what this fellow Googled and what this fellow kept on his phone and what he kept and other technology advances inside of perhaps where he lived. So I think that his movement from Patterson to New York, and I think all of that now can be monitored, and we will have a chance to determine whether or not he was telling the truth about this, and I think that'll come in succeeding days and weeks.
Now, Richie, in our home district, you're the congressman, I live there, people from the outside, quite frequently, people who have in-migrated, run the infrastructure, I mean, the restaurants, this, that, you get around. What would the effect be if Trump were able to really cut down on the number of people who could come to this country?
Well, one of the problems we have now, and it's a difficult one, I think, for some to acknowledge, is that we have a demographic issue in America that is not growing the way that I think would be desirable for economic purposes. And that's a reality, and I think it's oftentimes underreported. And that is that as we have moved in the direction of smaller families and the economy has simultaneously expanded, there is what is known as the labor participation rate, which I think is something that needs to be firmly acknowledged. And that is in the post-war period, about two-thirds of the American people went to work every day, and that number has now slipped to about 63.8%. But that means that there are millions of people who are not working, and even though that there are a series of jobs in technology and a series of jobs in precision manufacturing that go unanswered, there's another corresponding truth, and that is that to keep the economy growing, we are going to need a path to legal citizenship. And I think that that would allow sufficient opportunity for trying to acknowledge who individuals are by way of background, understanding that it takes a long time as it currently is constructed for people to get through that net. But I think it's interesting here, though. I had Janet Yellen in last week to speak with me, and we spoke for an hour, and we went back and forth in a conversation that was just the two of us in my office here with one staff member from her from the Federal Reserve and one from the Ways and Means Committee. And we had a very good conversation. We did not obviously talk about interest rates. I thought that would have not been up to me to suggest any changes there, because I do think that we rely upon their good judgment based upon a career of work. But I did have a chance to talk to her about this long-term demographic trend and the idea that America needs to begin to invest in human capital, meaning community colleges, meaning more apprenticeship programs, and yes, an issue that has become very important in terms of the construct, and that is an increase in investment in vocational education for the jobs that are available. But she also noted that in some ways, because of the fact that 10,000 people retire every day now in America, that there is going to be a need to replace them in the workforce, and even holding steady at that number that I gave of 63.8% is going to be a bit of a challenge in terms of labor participation, unless we're able to get people through, again, legal immigration to fill some of those jobs. And recall that in places like California and Silicon Valley, many of the great advances that have been made in terms of technology have largely come from the immigrant class.
Richie, there will be those who argue, in terms of what you just said, that if you raise the time of retirement on Social Security, certainly as one who is benefiting from it, I have no such preference, but that you would stop people from retiring at the rate in which they're retiring.
Well, we are raising the age of Social Security by 1 month every year. So the optimal benefit now for those that were born in the year 1949, when I was born, the optimal retirement would be 66 years old. And also, I think convincing people that postponing retirement from 62 to 69 increases the Social Security benefit by 7% a year. So that is a north of 40% benefit if you simply postpone retirement. And a lot of people decide to go back to work part-time afterwards. So I think that part of the conversation ought to involve encouraging people, because they're going to live much longer, to work much longer, and also understanding as part of that longevity, because more and more of the retirement system in America depends upon what we call the 401k. It means that a thriving stock market and increased wealth are going to be important to everybody, because they're simply going to live longer. And part of living longer, whether we want to hear it or not, also simultaneously means there's going to be more dementia and more Alzheimer's. So I think that this is a crisis that awaits America as to what retirement's going to look like for millions of Americans.
I only have 2 minutes here, Richie, and I love talking to you. I wanted to ask you, what will happen in the House if Mueller was fired by the President of the United States?
Oh, I think it would permeate a constitutional crisis. And I think that we can look back to Richard Nixon firing Archibald Cox. And I think in this instance here, this would be an event that would even supersede that one, in the sense that I don't know Mueller personally, but I can say this, that he is an individual in terms of his reputation is above reproach. And I also think that you are always better off to let the prosecutor make their way and to find out what is happening. And I think any effort to shortcut that would be an attack upon the Constitution. There are a lot of arguments, pro and con, about special prosecutors. I understand that. But you can't say that the prosecutor is about to be fired because he's uncovered something that the afflicted don't want to hear about. And I think in this case here that it would clearly create a constitutional crisis.
But I know I only have a minute, but I don't get that, because this is a president who does whatever he darn well wants to do. And if he's in a corner, like a rat, for example, won't he fight his way out?
Well, I think that you can see, again, and this, by the way, in some measure is based upon speculation, but I've gone through it from A to Z over the course of the last 48 hours. I anticipated what was coming based upon the initial report from CNN, later confirmed by NBC. And as you know, in the cycle of news media coverage, by the time we got to Monday morning, there was a full anticipation of what the indictment process would be about. But the critical factor here is to read the prosecutor's argument in the unsealing of the indictment. And the key case here was the third person, who was not on anybody's radar screen. And certainly perjury means that if you consider that the individual has not been sentenced yet, it means that the investigation's ongoing, even as it relates to him.
Richie Neal is the congressman from Massachusetts' 1st District, the most important district in America. He's a Democrat. He's been in office since 1989. He is the ranking Democrat, meaning the head Democrat on the Committee on Ways and Means. Richie, when we come back, we got a lot more.
I'm happy to talk.